John Morrison, Moondance on KFM. More fantastic music like that later on this evening with yours truly between 7 and 10 on the Irish music scene. Now, this next topic has certainly exercised a few listeners this morning when we mentioned it in the newspaper review. Professor Luke Clancy, Director General of the Tobacco Free Research Institute of Ireland and also Adjunct Professor at the Technological University of Dublin, joins me on the line. Professor Clancy, good morning.
Good morning, Owen.
There was an article in the papers yesterday saying that you essentially believe there should be no return of smoking areas outside pubs and restaurants in the coming months. Why is that?
Well, I think it's a good opportunity. You know, we're told this is going to be an outdoor summer where people will eat as well as just go out. And the whole idea of the smoking ban was to stop workers and punters from being damaged by secondhand smoke. Now, it was assumed at that time that that would only be inside. And while most people knew that there was no such thing as good secondhand smoke, they thought, well, outside there'll be very little, and anyway, people will be inside. So now we find that people are going to be outside. And the idea that we will damage ourselves outside just seems wrong. And when you think about it, and I asked people to think about the fact that during this pandemic, we have between 4,000 and 5,000 people died in this country from the pandemic, the virus, and maybe 7,000 have died from smoking-related diseases. The one virus we struggle to contain and to defeat, and the other a practice that we could control fully and restores people health. You know, as you know, there's all the people who die from smoking and from secondhand smoke, from cancer, heart disease, stroke, chronic bronchitis.
Just to be clear, Professor Clancy, then, are you calling for a ban on smoking areas where food is present, or a ban on smoking areas in pubs, nightclubs, restaurants altogether?
The latter, but I'm surprised that there is even the thought that there could be outside dining where smoking took place. You know, the big thing was to protect the workers, and that meant that there would be no service where there were people smoking. Now, in a time of crisis, when we know that the damage being done by the smoking is worse in terms of mortality than the pandemic, why one could be discriminated against or forbidden, why we close down the whole country, and yet we have something out there killing more people, and we won't even take sensible etiquette to forbid it. So I would say, when we agreed to the outside areas, it was because there was an idea, well, there are some people, and especially now at the beginning, they just won't be able to do without their cigarettes. So there should be somewhere where they wouldn't damage other people, somewhere where there was no commercial activity. And that was the idea. But the reality became that these places became attractive. There were heaters, they had tables, they had... It may not have had waiter service, but there was something going on, and glasses tended to be collected. And not only that, but non-smokers were there as well, and workers were there. So the idea that allowed them at the beginning has been corrupted, and they're no longer fulfill that purpose. And the prevalence of smoking now is much lower than it was. So there isn't the same need. And also, that denormalization, as it was called, of smoking was very helpful. And it brought about a reduction in smoking, and particularly, for some reason, in children. And we find now, in 2019, that the prevalence of smoking in young people, 16-year-olds, has begun to go up again, significantly in boys. And we feel that the renormalization of smoking, if people were to see this out in people enjoying themselves, not realizing that they are, in fact, addicted, and that it was causing disease. You know, you see people in a fun session, you think, oh, they're having a great time. But they're damaging themselves. We know this with the virus, and we've come to understand it.
Okay, and I just want to pick up on one point there that you mentioned. Yeah, yeah. And I think from the messages that we've had in from listeners, a lot would agree that perhaps smoking where food is present is not the best idea. And I take that point. But if you think of nightclubs or pubs in the general sense, before the pandemic came, the majority of people who spend time in smoking areas are smokers. And I completely understand that you might have a partner of a smoker who doesn't smoke, who goes to the smoking area. I take that. But the majority are smokers. It's their own decision to go out to the smoking area. And if you take somebody, say, who goes on a night out and is not a drinker, but is a smoker, what are they to do for the 3 or 4 hours if they like to go out and have their cigarette, but they can't do that if what happens, you're proposing, happens?
Well, what has happened is that people rethink smoking and they say, what about this? Why am I smoking? I'm smoking because I'm addicted and I need it. And that has encouraged people to stop smoking. It has protected workers and it has protected other people who don't smoke. The right to smoke-free air is pretty well established and accepted. We shouldn't let it slip now. It encourages people to stop. So I would say that it should be backed up by better smoking cessation services. Nothing has been done during the pandemic. Now, you know the cost of the pandemic. It's been enormous. Now, we have something because we're killing twice as many people. And we're doing almost nothing about it. And we're even quibbling about, oh, is that infringing their rights? We don't say that when we say this pub is closed because there might be a carrying of a virus here. You can't fly in that plane because you might get infected. We make all of these things to protect health. And here's something that's killing twice as many people. And we mightn't like the inconvenience. This is not appropriate. I'm just appalled and amazed if NPHET has said nothing about this. Now, I don't know because I'm not on NPHET, but I can't believe that they are neglecting the greatest chance to improve health in this country. And they can do that at stroke, and they don't even appear to have mentioned it. So I am, yes, calling for the giving up of these areas which are designated and dedicated to smoking. And people will go and smoke somewhere else. And more healthfully, they might give up smoking altogether. And we, as a state, should be there to help them to do that.
Or, on the flip side, what they might do, if there's no smoking area in a pub, is go out onto the street and smoke, outside the front door of a pub or out on the road.
They've been doing that for a long time. That's essentially what does happen. But also people are beginning to say, well, is this fair to other people who have to pass me? Will this smoke go back into the pub? I think, by and large, we are reasonable people, and we did accept this law preeminently in the world, and it's been a huge success. So don't say the people wouldn't do it. The people have been excellent. What's failing here is we haven't even regulated it, and we don't seem to have thought about it, even though we know that it's a greater cause of death than the virus.
But Professor Clancy, if you're saying that we're to ban smoking areas in pubs, and like I said, people then would go out onto the street and smoke, and I know you're saying that that has happened before, but then it goes from banning smoking areas to just banning smoking anywhere near a pub or a restaurant.
Yes, like we're trying to do with hospitals. Why should you do something that is antisocial and it's harmful? It's not just as antisocial and it's not nice and it's not pleasant. It is actually harming people, causing disease and death. And we think it's okay.
What would the buy-in be there from pub owners, nightclub owners, restaurant owners and also the public, do you think, in your opinion?
In my opinion, it would. But was the buy-in there for closing the pub because of COVID? We did that because it was necessary. Because we cared enough, because we didn't want to see our people dying. But we don't seem to mind that they die from smoking because someone else is making a few bob on it.
I want to play a little piece of audio here. It's a vox pop, a very short vox pop of just what some people think. I know there's mixed opinions on this, whether or not the smoking areas outside pubs and restaurants should be banned. Let's just have a listen.
You go to barbecue, do you complain about the smoke? No, you don't. It's part of being at a barbecue. So I think it's absolutely ridiculous.
It's out of my family. My brother, he has asthma. And it bothers me when people smoke around him, even though how are they supposed to know?
Listen, if it's somebody's pleasure with a cup of coffee, why not?
I think if they're conscious that you're sitting beside them and you're having a nice meal and they're not blowing the smoke in your face, yeah, it's nicer if they do that.
So there's mixed views, but I suppose finally, Professor Clancy, from your point of view, it's important to have a conversation about it.
Well, it's more important. I'm so disappointed that after all this time, the people don't see this disease for what it is and the slaughter it's causing in the country and how preventable it is and how it's only there to make money for multinationals. And they seem to think it's a harmless pathogen. That's a failure on me.
Okay, certainly it's an interesting topic and an interesting conversation, and no doubt I'm sure it'll be looked into as well over the coming months. Very interesting talking to you, Professor Clancy, Director General of the Tobacco Free Research Institute of Ireland and Adjunct Professor of Technologically at the Technological University of Dublin. Thanks for joining us on the programme this morning.
Thank you all.
Kildare Today with Owen Beattie.
With Whitewater Shopping Centre Newbridge, Ireland's largest regional shopping centre. Fashion, food, film, all under one roof in the heart of Newbridge. WhitewaterSC.ie.
Yeah, a couple of messages coming in then. Currently in cafes all over the country, staff are being forced to service tables of smokers outside. There is also another one here from Mick in Meath. I smoke and I have to agree with that professor. Smoking should be banned from eating areas and especially around food. It's common sense, but it's people's choice if they want to smoke, just not around where you're eating or food. So, yeah, would like to get your views on that. Do you think there should be just a blanket ban of smoking areas outside of pubs and restaurants in the coming months, as Professor Clancy was proposing? 0833 97 97 97 on the text and the WhatsApp. Kira.
Thank you. I am now joined now this morning with political correspondent for the Irish Times, John Downing. Good morning, John.
Hello, Kira. How are you?
I'm good, I'm good. I'm very...
Are you Irish Independent?
Oh, sorry, excuse me. Did
you
I say...
hit the wrong button.
Apologies. Oh, Irish, yeah. Independent. There, yeah. You go.
So it's the wages, you see.
Okay. John, we obviously know the Taoiseach has welcomed the support of the US President Joe Biden in the past few weeks regarding Northern Ireland post-Brexit arrangements. If the US president had not made his feelings on the issue clear, would Ireland primarily and the EU be in a very different position?
Yeah, I think so, undoubtedly. I think the intervention was huge. I think Britain has long tried to stress this sort of quote-unquote special relationship with the USA. It's a very unequal relationship. The USA is vastly richer, vastly more powerful on the world stage. Boots on the ground all over the world, the potential to do that. And I think when Joe Biden delivers such a strong and clear message to London, I think they have to take account of what he's saying.
And by and large, the meeting of Boris Johnson and Joe Biden yesterday did go off without a hitch, and it seemed quite friendly.
Yes. It's not done to embarrass your host, above all else, but it's not done in world diplomacy to have a go in public. So this was done very effectively in quasi-privacy, not entirely, because it was all put out there in advance of yesterday's meeting. So yes, they smile and they stress the positives. We don't know. They met for 90 minutes. We don't know what the exchange was. They came out with a relatively bland joint declaration saying, yes, in essence saying, yes, we still support peace in Northern Ireland. Well, who wouldn't, so to speak? But I think a very short, sharp shock was delivered by Washington to London over the past weeks. And it was put out there by London, curiously, by London sources yesterday, largely because they don't want the entire summit, which will go on today and tomorrow, they don't want that completely overshadowing Boris Johnson's big days and big day out. but the message is very clear and very strong.
Yeah, and just with that, right, the acting, well, she's basically the acting ambassador of the US in London, and there's no one in place at the moment since Donald Trump left office. She did note that even though there was some issues surrounding Northern Ireland, that any compromises on Northern Ireland would not dent chances of a new post-Brexit US-UK trade deal, which is what Boris Johnson desperately wants.
Absolutely. I mean, he wants this showpiece this weekend to say, look, post-Brexit, Britain is back on the world stage. But then he also wants stuff to replace arrangements to replace the loss of the biggest market in the world, which is the EU. 27 other countries right on the doorstep, 450 million people, and a huge practical benefit in a USA-UK trade arrangement, free trade arrangement. Noises from Washington saying, if you mess with Northern Ireland and the Irish border, you won't get that. And I think he's very aware of that. The Taoiseach, interestingly, picked up on the point you made, Ciara, which is that if you can fix Northern Ireland border, you'll have a lot of latitude and it won't be a factor in influencing any compromises. Won't be a technical impediment to a US-UK trade agreement.
John, we know with the former President Donald Trump, there was a lot of leaks from his administration. And I have to say, personally, I was quite surprised that we heard so much about the meeting between Joe Biden and Boris Johnson before it actually took place, as you say, like nearly a week in advance. Were you surprised that the feelings of Joe Biden were released to the public in advance of the meeting?
Yeah, it's an interesting point, Ciara. Joe Biden has made it very clear from the word go that he's very strong views on Ireland, very strong views on the fragility of peace in Northern Ireland. What did surprise me was the strength and the level at which he went in. He issued what amounts to a diplomatic rebuke to London. That it very rarely happens when friendly nations are dealing with one another. That kind of stuff happens more readily in the line of when the Ryanair flight was basically hijacked by Belarus. They got a diplomatic rebuke. It's a very strong device to issue. And I was surprised by the strength of it. And I was surprised by how publicly the business was done.
Something, I guess, quite dramatic. We know in December 2019, when Joe Biden was told that Boris Johnson had won the majority in the UK general election, he went on to call him a physical and emotional clone of another blonde, tousled man you note in your article here with the Irish Independent, the then president, obviously Donald Trump. Was there any awkwardness, do you think, John?
On that level, I'd say not. These are professional politicians, and you know, stuff you say on the campaign trail kind of stays on the campaign trail. After that, you do business. We've had this over the years where politicians say shocking things about each other one week, and then a fortnight after the election, there they are sitting cheek by jowl together at the cabinet table. So on that level, I'd say they got over that one pretty quickly.
Tell me this, John. Why is Brexit off the table at the summit today, the G7 summit?
Well, they have other really big stuff going down. There's the whole post-pandemic world. There's the whole issue of taxing multinationals. There are issues about other very detailed issues about trade, tariffs. There's the not insignificant detail about can the West put any kind of face together against authoritarian regimes in Moscow and Beijing, and that's of course very difficult because in the relations the seven biggest economic powers around the table together, there are very different relationships in the way each of those seven relate to China and to Russia. There are also invited guests at this weekend, the other big economic powers who, you know, such as India, Australia, South Africa, they have a guesting role at this. There are big, big global issues.
Yeah, and as Boris Johnson, as you note in the article from today's Irish Independent, he wants the summit to show that the UK is still a big player, basically, post-Brexit. And do you think he's going to walk away from this summit thinking, this is great, we're in a great position post-Brexit, I'm a great leader? I guess the answer is yes, probably.
The answer is yes. Yeah, never underestimate the vanity of people at that level to some degree. But you have to remember, a lot of this, like the Brexit rows, it's being played for home consumption. It's being played quite specifically to the English Conservative heartland. And I stress the word English as opposed to British.
Yes, absolutely.
Because Scotland and Wales and Northern Ireland, mm-hmm. out of the equation there.
Voted very differently, yes.
Yeah. So I think he's going to try and take some kudos on the world stage and some local advantage in England.
Okay, well, John Downing, political correspondent with the Irish Independent and Newbridge resident, you have so much time for us here at KFM and we greatly appreciate it. Thank you.
Thanks indeed for that, Ciara, and also to John Downing for joining us on the programme. Text in on WhatsApp saying, what about the 1,300 people who die as a result of air pollution in Ireland each year? Ban petrol and diesel cars, it would be more like it. It's probably healthier to stand in a smoking area than it is to walk through any town or city in Ireland at the moment. Smoking areas are the least of our worries, in my opinion, you say. And just finally, before we go to our next topic and the email that came in to us, just wondering if we could give a mention to the children at Kids at Play in Kilcock and Maynooth, who are putting a teddy bear's picnic for the Jack and Jill Children's Foundation up and running to raise money for the 20 children we support in Kildare and the 385 nationwide. They've got the picnics in the morning and afternoon sessions with the children, keeping the teddies in their own little picnic pods. Balloons, books, blocks, teddies, picnics, food, fun, and they'll even be going on a bear hunt and going to catch a big one, just like in the storybook. And I think a text came in on the WhatsApp as well, wondering if we could give that a mention. Well, there you go, and best of luck with it. Definitely for a great cause. Right, back to local issues then, and Social Democrats councillor on the Selbridge Leixlip Municipal District, Nuala Killeen. Good morning to you, Nuala.
Good morning, Owen. How are you today?
Not too bad. Bit of good news for us on a Friday morning.
Yeah, it's definitely a welcome addition. Kildare County Council announced to us yesterday that they had secured the purchase of 55 new homes in Selbridge, just at Newton on the Ardcluck Road. So I definitely welcome this. It's an outright ownership rather than long-term leasing. It's some good news for a Friday for everybody in the community. Now, obviously, these won't be on stream maybe till next year. And the arrangements are usually a couple of years, you know, in the negotiations and stuff, but it is really welcome news for the district, as there's quite a substantial waiting list, and it's a good number, it's a good mix. There's 36 three-bed homes, 4 four-bed units and 2 one-bed, so it's really welcome addition. It's just a bit of good news really for Kildare to have outright ownership of some new stock in the district.
Yeah, obviously housing has been in the headlines over the last couple of weeks. We've heard so many terms thrown around, like cuckoo funds, vulture funds, and investment funds. Just explain to us then the difference between outright ownership and long-term leasing and why this is more beneficial for the council and for the public.
It is open to the council to engage in long-term leasing arrangements, and that's part of the Rebuilding Ireland, one of the pillars of housing. But long-term leasing is where, for 20 to 25 years, the council or another entity would engage in leasing a property from the developer or a management company, so that the stock is actually rented like you would in, you know, normal commercial rent. But in respect of outright ownership, you own the asset. So, you know, that is Kildare County Council stock. It is a slightly more expensive way of securing housing because the initial financial outlay is more. But actually, in the long term, the asset is owned by the council, and it is for families based in the district to be housed within those units. And actually, then at the end of a 25-year period, the stock is still owned by the council. You know, there's no return to any other ownership. So, in respect of leasing, after the end of the lease agreement, which might be 20 to 25 years, then that stock would return to the legal owner, you know. So that's why we would have been in the Social Democrats critical of those arrangements, because we didn't feel that a long-term programme of leasing was economic. But we do feel that outright ownership is a more sustainable way of building communities, and it gives more security, because if you imagine after 25 years our concern, where there was estates with large numbers of leased units, then after 25 years you still have a cohort of families that may need housing, and it was a big worry, you know, it's just kicking the problem down the road. But obviously Kildare County Council are trying to deliver housing in whatever way that's open to them, so, you know, look, I mean, I'm sure they're doing their best to deal with the crisis as it presents, but I think from a government perspective or a national perspective, ownership is a more sustainable way of building communities than long-term leasing, and this news is very welcome for our district indeed.
And just to reiterate, it's 55 units in total, 49 turnkey and 6 part 5, and the breakdown, once again, 3 bed units, 36 of them, 4 bed units, 4 2 bed units, there'll be 13, and 1 bed units, there'll be 2 of those. A reminder once again, finally, Nuala, where exactly these houses are, and have they been built yet, or how far along in the process are we?
Yeah, they're due to be delivered next July, so that's 2022, and they're based at Newtown up the Ardclough Road in Selbridge, so they're in a good space where there is a high demand for social housing, so it's very welcome indeed.
Okay, Social Democrats councillor on the Selbridge Leixlip Municipal District with that news, Nuala Killeen. Thanks for joining us, Nuala.
Have a great day. Thanks a million, Owen.
Kildare Today with Owen Beattie.
With Whitewater Shopping Centre Newbridge, Ireland's largest regional shopping centre. Fashion, food, film, all under one roof in the heart of Newbridge. WhitewaterSC.ie.
You're very welcome back to the show. Now, on Tuesday, the Naas Municipal District meeting took place, the monthly meeting that is, and on the line I have Independent Councillor Shamie Moore. Good morning, Shamie.
Good morning, Ciara. Good morning, listeners.
Shamie, just to begin, you asked the council to confirm with Waterways Ireland three things. If an illegally constructed bridge or barrier wall on the Kirkcaldy Branch Canal can be removed or must be allowed to remain. The second thing, if a modern system of water underpass could be advanced to overcome the blockage by the Naas Newbridge Road. And the third, if an expanded volume of water can be sourced and supplied to the Naas Kirkcaldy Branch in the event of an agreed promotion of new marinas, boats or daily boat traffic into Naas Harbour. Tell us, what was the response from the council?
Thank you very much, Kira. Look, I'll take the last one first. The expanded water needs in the Naas Harbour area. As listeners probably know, and certainly people living beside the canal would know, every time a boat goes through a lock, it releases about 300 or 400 tonnes of water. There are 5 locks on the Naas branch, and each one then supplies water to the lower level as the boat climbs upwards. But when it gets to the 5th lock, it has to take the water from the Naas Harbour basin of water, and that is not endless. It's a volume of water which is fed with a little small stream called the Rathasker Stream, and that is not sufficient for big volume boats coming into Naas, and successive opening and closing of the locks and releasing of those hundreds of tons of water. And that has happened because some years ago there was a much stronger stream of water that fed the Naas Canal called the Corbally River, and that was diverted in 1983 to the Thomastown area of the Liffey. And the reason for doing that at the time was because there was no boating as such on the canal, and the supply of water at that stage was too much, and it was causing flooding. So the answer to my question is, we'll deal with it later on. We're dealing with the greenways and the blueways on the different canals and barrow stuff at the moment, and it looks like they want to focus on that for the next couple of years, which is the land use of the canal areas.
Yes.
But I was talking about the water use.
Yes.
That's item 3. The second one, an underpass, they'll deal with that later on. That's what they're saying with Waterways Ireland. Mm-hmm. And the first one, which is was the illegally constructed bridge and barrier, they seem to think that lost their opportunity of dealing with that, because after 7 years of a use of an item like a bridge like that, it becomes an acceptable use, even though it's unauthorised.
Now, your next motion, Seamie, I guess you could call it the redirection of HGVs. You're asking for the council to consider banning them from using the town section of the Blessington Road. What was the response?
I had a great response on that. I'm very pleased with the report. It basically says that Kildare County Council, instead of pushing through with the road through the racecourse, that they're now open to talking with the residential groups or anybody that or any group that would help in having roads put through that were problems prior before this, and they'll discuss it. So I do know that they have a deputation group, a ready-made group in Kildare County Council who will talk to residential groups in the Racecourse Road. The whole idea was to highlight the need to talk to residential groups, and I'm delighted that Kildare County Council are responding positively, and I know they're using a facilitator to link up with the racecourse residential groups already, and I'm delighted about that.
Okay, Seamie, just finally, can members of the committee be supplied with copies of any correspondence and reports from recent works at St David's Castle? What was the report finding there?
Well, they did supply a report on what is now going to happen in terms of the next stage of trying to rescue the castle. They have sent out a form to the actual owners of it. It would be called a Section 59 order, and it identifies how it should be done and how it should be reported on progressively. And I'm very happy with that, as would Councillor Breen, who was a very strong advocate on the same problems around the illegal walk that was going on in St David's Castle. It's now all rectified in relation and regulated, and I gather the developer and Kildare County Council planners are walking hand in glove with the heritage section at national level as well.
Okay, well, Councillor Seamie Moore, independent of Naas Municipal District, thank you.
Thank you very much.
Sports Preview Friday on Kildare Today.
Yes, and it's a very busy weekend of sporting action indeed for Kildare teams. The footballers, hurlers and ladies footballers are all in action, and looking ahead to the action is sports editor with the Leinster Leader, Tommy Callaghan. Tommy, good morning.
Bye.
I mean, look, where do you start? It's going to be a cracking weekend, and we could be in for a very successful weekend if everything goes according to plan. We'll start off by talking about the footballers, though, up against Meath on Sunday in St Connolly's Park in the Allianz National Football League Division 2 semi-final. Essentially, though, Tommy, this is the final.
It is, of course, yeah, absolutely the final. There's no final as such this year in Division 2 in one or two other divisions as well, due to the championship starting within 2 weeks' time. And the winners of this goes up to Division 1 along with the winners of the other semi-final, so-called semi-final, between Mayo and Clare. So this is, in fact, in my opinion, probably the biggest game Kildare play this year, even allowing for championship to come up in a couple of weeks' time. This is an absolutely incredible chance to get up to Division 1 football. And even though it was a changed format this year, only four teams in the group, 3 matches to get to this stage. But it's an opportunity that hopefully will be grabbed by Kildare.
And the last time out, 2 weeks ago, they had a brilliant win against Laois, which actually saw them finish top of the table. And it was interesting listening to Jack O'Connor after the game, because he said maybe we weren't as good as we thought we were against Cork, and we weren't as bad as some people thought we were against Clare. We're just somewhere in the middle. That kind of sums up Kildare's performances, does it?
I actually thought that was a very good way of describing the two games, you know, because when Kildare beat Cork, everybody was getting very excited because it was Cork. Mm. And then Cork came along and they picked themselves up after that defeat. We then lost to Clare, which was another blow. It was a blow to lose Clare at the Bennett last year in the league, down announced by a point. And I think a lot of people felt there's still a perception out there that it's only Clare. And that perception is just totally off the wall. It's wrong. Clare are a hell of a good, strong team. And I'm not saying they beat Mayo at the weekend, but they'll certainly give them a hell of a good game for it. But It's a repeat of the Leinster semi-final last year in Croke Park last November. Now, literally, we know coming out of Croke Park, had they been beaten, that would be beaten, playing Meath for a place in Division 1 5 or 6 months afterwards. But Kildare played very well that day against Meath for a long time in that game. They were 6 points ahead, I think it was, at half time, and incredibly conceded 5 second half goals in that game. It was a bit of a freak result. I'm not saying Meath didn't deserve to win it, but to concede 5 goals was just off the wall, and I don't think that will happen anywhere. And I think it's a better Kildare team this year. They're playing well, their confidence is up, and then there's a couple of young lads there and they're playing particularly well. It'll be a hell of a good game, and I'm really looking forward to it on Sunday.
Let's just get a taster then of what Jack O'Connor said looking ahead to the game on Sunday.
I couldn't even tell you when the championship is on. All we're doing is concentrating on this because, you know, it's very, very important for Kildare to stay, you know, to be looking upwards rather than downwards. And this morning on the road up, we were facing a relegation game if we can get a result here. So, look, we're just concentrating on that. It's too far away to be thinking of the championship. So, look, we're just trying to build a bit of confidence.
Yeah, Jack O'Connor taking it one game at a time, not even looking ahead to the championship, but focusing on Sunday's game against Meath. And Tommy, also in that interview, it's been something that a lot of people who have got in contact with us here have said, that Kildare play better in the wider pitches, and Jack O'Connor seemed to agree with that as well, saying perhaps St. Connolly's Park is a bit narrow.
Yeah, but in fairness, that's not the first time Jack said that. He said that nearly from day one.
Yeah.
I remember meeting him for an interview with the local press when he arrived, and he was always of the opinion, that's just the way it is. I mean, it just hit the headlines because there was a lot more national media around at the time he said it last Sunday week. But he's probably right, in fairness, especially the way Kildare are playing football now. They're spreading the ball very well. They're going from left to right. You can talk about that. That's not going to happen. Even in the redevelopment of St. Connolly's, the pitch might be realigned a slightly bit, but it's not going to be don't have the room to make it any larger than what it is. So that's it is what it is, and there's no point going down that road.
How do you think the game will go on Sunday then, Tommy? Close, or could you see either side running away with it?
Oh, I think it'll be a close game, to be quite honest with you. The main thing is for Kildare to get off to a decent start and put Meath under pressure. That's really what we want. I think they're playing well. I said it already there. I just think Kildare are playing well at the moment. There are injuries. We have to wait and see. We've no team, of course, yet. Probably tonight. A few lads. Daniel Flynn played some part of the challenge last weekend. I think it was against Down. He's out since the first match with his hamstring. He's always worried the hamstring of Daniel's gives him terrible trouble. The other one you'd be worried about would be Kevin Feely. Kevin came off at half time against Laois. Now Aaron Maston came on that day and he played particularly well. He played very well actually. He scored 2 points, but not known to score. His overall play was exceptionally good. But either way, Kevin Feely would be a loss. The other good news from the injury point of view is that Niall Kelly's back in full train, and unfortunately Jack Robinson had to drop out. Jack had a long term hamstring problem going back to the intermediate final last year. Unfortunately played probably when he shouldn't have, and he's out for a considerable amount of time from what I hear. But all going well, especially if we can get the full everybody fit, everybody's available, I'm looking forward to it, and I think we could squeak it by a couple of points.
Yeah, it throws in at 2 o'clock on Sunday, full commentary on KFM with Ger McNally, Peter McConnon and Johnny Doyle in association with Handling Concrete Products of Robertstown. On Saturday, we'll also have full commentary of the Hurlers game against Mayo. That is up in Castlebar. Ger McNally watching that game, throwing in at 2 o'clock. Tommy, before we talk about it, we'll just hear what David Herity had to say.
If Mayo win the league, if we win the league, so it's a championship final basically. So it's extremely competitive, I know. They've had a kind of a mixed league, but at the same time they went out kind of with a few changes there the last day against Donegal and got caught in the hop. But they'll be back home in their own home territory. They'll be buzzing to try and get, they know themselves, one win and they've won the league, so they'll we just have to get ourselves right. It's a quick 6-day turnaround and get ourselves right for next Saturday.
Doesn't get more straightforward than that, Tommy. Winner takes all tomorrow.
It doesn't. Actually, it's all due to Clare. Clare are firing on all cylinders, in fairness to them, at the minute. They're hitting up massive scores. I was in Roscommon last Sunday, and not alone did the score, what was the final score, at 4:35, but I think they hit something like 17, 18 wides. Now, that's something that annoyed David Hurley. Not the fact that they were wides, but he felt that they took the foot off the pedal somewhat in the second half. And I mean, they were never threatened. I mean, the leg was 3:15, 4 points at half time, so the match was effectively over. I suppose it's very hard to keep going, you know. It's very hard when you're that far in front. But they're playing well, and all 4 points that they should beat Mayo. You know, I mean, they are something. Clare are an aggregate scoreline of something like plus 68 or something. Every other team in the group are in a minus category. So that'll show you what they're doing.
And following the victory of the Christie Ring Cup as well, you know, it has to be argued Kildare shouldn't be in Division 2B of the Allianz Hurling League, and anything else other than promotion up to 2A would be seen as a disappointment.
It wouldn't be a disappointment, it would be a disaster, in fairness. I mean, in fairness to David Hurley, since day one, he wants to get Kildare up to Division 2A, at least. And, I mean, he's done a mighty good job with them. They're playing good hurling. They're probably stronger this year than they were last year with the addition of a few lads. Now, unfortunately, Jerry Keegan came on last week. I don't mean unfortunately he came on, but he picked up an injury when he came on. That would have been his first time playing. He was away for 2 years, and then he was back last year and he picked up a hamstring, knocked him up knocked him up for the whole 12 months. And he came on in the first half. After about 20 minutes, one of the boys were injured. He came on, he scored 2 quick points, one from a very acute angle, showed signs at all. Jerry Keegan is as good a hurler before he went away as any hurler we've seen in White. And unfortunately, he got a bang on the hand or the finger. I'm not sure, I think it was the finger actually. Now, how bad it was or is, I don't know. But there'd be a bit of a loss, a bit of a disappointment. But overall, the Kildare Hurling team are playing particularly well. Declan Flaherty and Johnny Byrne are getting lots of credit. But I mean, you have Brian Byrne, Jack Sheridan scored once again. The talent this man has is incredible. He put over a cut last Sunday in Roscommon that if he was one of the superstars of hurling of today, it would be shown on the Sunday game over and over again. And Jack, it is nothing unusual for Jack Sheridan to knock a sideline cut over the bar. He does it regularly, and it's a mighty skill. David Flaherty got 2 goals. He could have got 4 last Sunday. James Buck. Overall, the whole team is playing well, and it'll be a huge disappointment if they don't beat Mayo. But you'd have to fancy the Kildare. There's no doubt in the world about that.
And just finally, then, Tommy, and very quickly, the Kildare ladies in action on Sunday against Sligo. That's in Division 3 of the Leader Ladies National Football League, and they also have promotion in their sights.
They have indeed, which was their number one aim as well. They had a good win, a very hard earned win over Longford by 1 point last week in St. Conrad's Park. The only downside or worry is that Roisin Byrne went off with what looked like a bad injury that day. I haven't heard since how Roisin is, but that certainly didn't look good. If Roisin is not playing, that would be a huge blow to Kildare. She's a class act. And listen, that match is against Sligo, who I'm told were a decent team a couple of years ago. They dropped down a bit, but now they seem to be coming on their way back up again. So it won't be anything easy. I think that match in Roscommon on Sunday. But Kildare have shown that they're capable of digging deep, and it has to be done. They've done it in the last 2 matches. I think they won the 2 of them by 1 point. So I mean, there's certainly no shortage of effort. And listen, we wish them the best of luck. And it'd be great if we won the 3 matches and 3 teams were promoted into 1 weekend. That'd be unheard of.
Yeah, it'd be fantastic, and it'd be something that would just cap off a beautiful weekend. And we'd be looking back at the games, of course, on Monday. You can read all the reports and interviews in Tuesday's Leinster Leader with Tommy, and of course you won't miss a thing here on KFM, because Saturday and Sunday Sports Beat, full commentary of the hurling and football games, association with Hanlon Concrete. Concrete Products of Robertstown, and also updates of the ladies' game as well. Quick break to take and we'll finish up after this. All right, just before we go, to say a very happy 75th birthday to a very inspirational sister, Anne McCarthy in Abbey Terrace, who we're told has shown sheer determination to overcome recent challenges, and that comes in with lots of love from her sister Phil Goodwin and the gang in Kildare, who hope she has a wonderful birthday. So Anne McCarthy, 75 today, have an absolutely fantastic day. That is just about all we have time for. A reminder that a repeat of the programme is aired every evening from 10 o'clock. I'll be back tonight from 7 on the Irish music scene, featuring the very best of homegrown talent. John Dunn is up next with the 11 to 2 show. My thanks to Kira Noble for a great job on production all week. The three of us will be back on Monday from 9 o'clock, myself, Kira and Clem. Let's go to the newsroom and Kira Plunkett.